Today I'd like to talk about the fourth faculty, the faculty of concentration. We all have some idea of what we mean by concentration, although perhaps some of our usual ways of thinking about it might have a little bit of a spin to it. Often when we think about concentration, we think about focusing, perhaps even narrowing of the attention, or of blocking things out. And that is one way that concentration can be understood. But I think a good definition or a way to think about concentration is as a unification of mind. The mind is gathered together, collected, and all functioning with one purpose in mind. The mind is unified. It's said that the concentrated mind, the manifestation, one of the manifestations of the concentrated mind is non-distraction. So our usual mode of experience is one in which our minds are often flighty, scattering off into various directions. We see something and start thinking about it, or we remember something and start thinking about that, and our mind just is very rarely in that non-distracted mode. So in the concentrated mind, the mind becomes collected or gathered so that it's no longer scattering or flying out into many directions. Gill has used a translation that I particularly like for translation: composed. This sense of the mind being composed, collected, standing with experience. So this concentration, the faculty of concentration, is said to arise naturally, much as we've been talking about for the last few days, how the faculty, Guild spoke last night about the faculty of mindfulness naturally arising when faith and energy are present. And it is also said, it is to be expected that one who has faith, whose energy is aroused, and whose mindfulness is established, that person will gain concentration. So it's to be expected. It's a natural consequence of having the faith, the energy, and the mindfulness working together, that concentration is a result. So one way that concentration comes about, well, actually the way that concentration comes about is through mindfulness becoming continuous. Whether that continuity of mindfulness is on one single experience, like the breath, and stabilizing the mind on the breath, or whether that continuity of mindfulness is the ability for the mind to stay present in the moment, undistracted by changing experience. It is the continuity of the mindfulness that results in concentration. And so it is the energy and mindfulness together. That's how energy supports mindfulness to create the concentration. Energy helps the mindfulness stay connected moment after moment. So the purpose of concentration, I don't want to just talk about it in the abstract, you know, what's the point of concentration? Well, it feels pretty good, you know, that's one thing that we discover as the mind settles down into this non-distracted place. You know, it feels pretty good to have the mind not be scattered off into many directions, to not be pulled into aversion or frustration, to not have the mind pulling into the past or the future. It feels pretty good to have the mind settling down. So that's one of the benefits of concentration, that it feels good. It gives us a kind of a respite or a break. It's refreshing. It can be refreshing to have that space of peace, of ease, that can result with concentration. From a deeper level, or the more foundational or beneficial purpose of concentration has to do with how it works with mindfulness. So when concentration supports mindfulness, it allows that concentration to see really, really clearly into what's happening in the moment. It allows us to see just what's unfolding. It allows us to understand and see our relationship to that. It allows us to understand how cause and effect work, how certain, as we've been speaking about, certain qualities or states of mind, if we're acting out of greed, aversion, delusion, that tends to lead us into struggle, into suffering, into distress. And acting out of non-greed, non-aversion, non-delusion tends to lead us more towards happiness, peacefulness. We see directly this cause and effect relationship. That the mind begins to directly understand the truth of those two pathways. And in seeing that truth, the mind more naturally begins to choose the skillful truth, the skillful way, the skillful path. So the concentration supports the mindfulness by allowing us to see really clearly into the present moment. It's kind of like mindfulness is a knife, and concentration is the honing or the sharpening of that knife. So mindfulness and concentration together provide the ground for wisdom to grow, the fifth faculty, provide the ground for insight, the direct understanding of wisdom. So the other day I spoke about wisdom being that there's different levels of wisdom. And there's the first levels of wisdom, as I said, are the taking in the information. You know, that we have to have a certain perspective, gain a certain understanding of a view or a perspective that's helpful, that will lead us towards letting go of the way we struggle. That initial understanding from learning, from listening, from reflecting, isn't powerful enough to really change the way we relate to the world. It takes the concentration and the mindfulness to directly see the truth of the wisdom that we've been learning, to directly meet that truth, for that wisdom to then become our own. That wisdom then becomes insight. We see directly for ourselves the truth of what we've been hearing about. It's a simple example. You know, just a very simple example that when we bring that kind of non-judgmental, non-reactive mindfulness to a difficult experience, we can watch that difficult experience begin to release on its own and directly understand from that, seeing that, we directly understand the benefit of that mindfulness. We directly understand how mindfulness is helpful to us. So that kind of shift of perspective that we have is a kind of an insight. When we can bring a non-judgmental, non-reactive mindfulness to our attention, we begin to see our experience in a different way. Directly see it in a different way. Not because somebody's told us about it, but we directly know for ourselves. So the purpose of concentration has to do with allowing our mindfulness to support moving towards insight, to move towards wisdom, the direct understanding of wisdom, the experiential knowing for ourselves of the wisdom that the Buddha teaches. So there are two different kinds of concentration, and I just briefly referred to them a few moments ago. And I want to elaborate a little bit more on those, because sometimes this can be an area of some confusion or of of confusion. So there's a kind of concentration that comes when the mindfulness gets stable on one experience. And this is, I think, what most of us, when we first meet meditation, what we think of as a concentration experience is when the mind settles down on one thing, it gets quiet, thoughts tend to dissipate, the mind kind of just gets really steady and still. So this first kind of concentration we could call a one-pointed concentration. It's cultivated by directing our attention to one experience, such as the breath, and then basically having the practice be noticing when we're attending to the breath, and if we notice that our attention has wandered from the breath, or whatever our object of concentration is, there's many different objects that could be used for concentration. So in this case, the breath. When we're noticing our attention's not on the breath, we see if we can let that go and come back to the breath, so that we're trying to stabilize our attention on this one experience. This results in a calm mind, a steady mind. It can have some very beautiful feelings associated with it. Bliss, peace, happiness. So that's one type of concentration. The other type of concentration is a moment-to-moment concentration. It's this ability of the mind to stay non-distracted in the face of changing experience. And so it's a steadiness of awareness. There's a stability of the mind in terms of it's not pulled out of the present moment based on all of the things that are happening. But it's not a stillness of mind and that there's very little happening. Sometimes this kind of concentration can feel very dynamic. A lot going on. So it's not got that kind of really quiet. It doesn't have to have that really kind of quiet space of the one-pointed concentration, but the stability of the mind here is what's important. So I'd like to talk a little about each of these in just a little more detail, and then talk about how we use this kind of concentration to support our understanding, to support insight. So the one-pointed concentration, you know, kind of, it's a really simple kind of meditation practice. It's kind of whatever the object we've chosen, breath. It might be an image in our mind. It might be a mantra. We've been encouraging settling on the breath in this retreat, using the breath as a place to stabilize the attention. It works to collect the mind because we're staying with one experience. And essentially, when we're not with that experience, it's like we just recognize not breath. Let me come back to the breath. So it's really kind of simple. We don't have to do much with not breath. Just put recognize, oh, not breath and come back. Not breath and come back. So we let go of what's not breath. We let go of distracting thoughts. We let go of other body sensations. Just keep coming back to the breath over and over and over and over again. With that process, the mind begins to collect around that experience. The attention gathers, the mind settles, begins to almost merge with that experience of the breath. Very, very peaceful experience. As we're playing with this practice, You know, it's not so simple as just, oh, breath, not breath, breath, not, oh, not breath, come back, not breath, come back. Our minds aren't quite that tractable. There are factors that tend to get in the way as we play with trying to concentrate our mind this way. There are different qualities of mind, different energies, I call them energies, of our minds, habitual energies of our mind that get in the way of concentration. And these are the five hindrances. Many of you have probably heard of these. They are energies that basically obstruct the mind's ability to settle in the present moment. And they are sense desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, or sleepiness, dullness, restlessness, and doubt. So this is part of our learning, actually. Mindfulness and the practice of trying to settle the mind in concentration. We learn about our minds. We learn about these energies. And we learn how to more skillfully work with them. So in concentration, if we're doing a concentration practice, kind of the first way that we might try to work with them is to simply say, okay, well, there's, and for me, this was like a revelation, actually. When I first did concentration practice, I was doing it as a metta practice, and I would notice all of this anger come up. It's like, oh, you know, so I was doing, may you be happy, and then, may you be healthy, and I was doing dishwashing in the evening, and I would, you know, may all beings be happy, and then the machine would stick, and he'd be like, who designed this stupid machine anyway? So yeah, I would notice all of this kind of difficult energy coming in, but it was kind of a relief to me to recognize, oh, I can just, you know, let that go and go back to the concentration. And over time, just the letting go of that difficult energy, it was like it stopped being fed. So it wasn't like I was being averse to it. It wasn't like I was pushing it away. It's just like, oh yeah, there's that. Just come back to the metta phrases. Oh, there's another burst of anger. Oh, just come back to the metta phrases. So it was kind of a revelation for me to recognize that I could simply let go of those energies and not have to, I mean, I had done a lot of mindfulness practice, oh, turn to the anger, attend to the anger. It was kind of a relief to recognize, oh, I didn't have to do that. I could just let that energy be. It would kind of dissipate in the background while I kept going with the concentration practice. Sometimes our minds aren't quite that friendly either, so we need to more directly work with the hindrances. So if you're cultivating this practice of coming back to the breath over and over, and you find it's not so possible to just say, oh, there's anger, well, I'll just come back to the breath. Again, if you feel like you're pulled, if you feel like you're pulled to some other experience while you're trying to stabilize with the breath, let go of the breath and turn towards that experience. Mindfulness of these energies. And very much, many of these energies can be explored in the way I was describing working with emotions this morning. So with sense desire and ill will in particular, turning towards those energies in the body. How does it feel to want something? How does it feel to not like something, to have that energy of hostility? What is it like in the body? Let go of the thoughts and come into the feeling. And as you do that, that energy may dissipate, and then you can come back to the practice of being with the breath. So as we cultivate concentration, we run into these difficult energies and we work with them. We practice being aware of them, letting them go as we can, redirecting our attention. And as the mind begins to settle with the experience of the breath, as the mind can let go of those energies and settle with the experience of our meditation object, some very beautiful qualities start to come up. And these qualities that come up in our concentration actually naturally begin to counter the energies of the hindrances. And so there's a quality of mind that directs attention to experience. That as we keep attending to one experience over and over again, that quality of directing the attention gets strong. And that directing of the attention is said to counter the hindrance of dullness and sleepiness. And you can play with that. You can try that sometime. If you find yourself a little bit tired or sleepy, try directing the attention, picking something to turn the attention to. Sometimes one of my teachers in Burma said, when dullness happens, see if you can attend a little more closely to the experience of the breath. Be a little bit more careful about it. And that would sometimes bring up the energy. We have to be careful in doing that, not to overdo it, not to over effort there. Because there can be when the mind gets dull and sleepy, the energy is low. If we're trying to be precise without doing it in a relaxed way, the mind can get tight. So we always need to take care in how we apply our energy to concentration. This is one of the big lessons I've had in my practice, is how to bring attention to experience. How do I bring my attention to the breath in such a way that it creates that kind of relaxed concentration? Gil mentioned this the other day, that we can force our way to concentration, but it's much more helpful, actually. That kind of concentration, that forced concentration, can be kind of brittle. And it's much more helpful to approach concentration in a much more relaxed way. So that's been my own approach, actually. You know, one of the ways I work with concentration is I start with the this aspect, these first two aspects, actually, of this aiming of the attention and the sustaining of the attention. That's the second factor that gets strong in concentration. I'll just mention what the sustaining of the attention is said to counter the quality of doubt in our mind. So that's actually something also to pay attention to. If you find that the doubt is coming up, just pick something and try paying attention to it. Doubt cannot really withstand the continuity of attending on experience. Doubt will kind of fade as we keep our attention on an experience. So these two qualities, this aiming of the attention or directing the attention and the sustaining of the attention, these two are really how we make our effort in concentration. That's how we apply our energy. Direct the attention, see if we can sustain that attention. And that's where the art of meditation, as I was talking about the other day in talking about energy, comes in. And for myself, what I really discovered is that helpful to begin my practice by finding a relaxation of body and a relaxation of mental energy. So a kind of mind that can meet experience kind of in a soft way, not in a gripping way, but also not in a kind of a drifty way. A kind of mind that can be relaxed and connected. So finding that place of relaxed connection with experience, can I allow the breath to be what the mind connects to in that way? Often what I would find, and this has been my exploration in concentration, is I find that as soon as I really try to turn my attention to the breath, it's like, whoo, the mind kind of gets tight. And so letting go, backing up, backing off. That's not the way my mind has learned. I finally understood that's not the way. It's not worth it. It's not worth it to hold on to that object, to develop a concentration in that way. As opposed to just backing off. It's like, okay, the mind can't be quite relaxed and attentive to the breath. Just see if I can go back and connect to that relaxation again. and then try again. And I would go back and forth a bunch of times until the mind could finally, oh, here's how I can be attentive to the breath in a relaxed way. And from there, the concentration would more naturally unfold. And so it's bringing these two together, this aiming, the directing of the attention, and the sustaining of the attention, so they can both be relaxed and not forceful. That will be the way that the concentration can be more, it's more of a broad feeling of concentration. It's more the feeling of stability of mind. Really feels stable. Then another beautiful quality that starts to arise as we can attend to experience in this relaxed, non-forcing, non-grasping, non-clinging way, we start to experience some joy. Sometimes it's not felt so much as joy, as what we would call joy, but sometimes it's felt as kind of a rapt interest, just like, wow, that's really interesting. This quality is said to counter the hindrance of ill will. So that as that begins to arise, ill will is beginning to recede. The next quality, or another quality that begins to arise, is what's called happiness. This is a kind of a sweet, tranquil, pleasant experience that accompanies concentration. Rapture can have a little more energetic kind of feeling. For me, the primary feeling around sukha is sweet. And, I call it the oh yes state. So that's what my mind does when I feel sukha. Oh, yes. It's a really pleasant, but there's a tranquility to it. And then the last, the fifth quality, the sukha counters the hindrance of restlessness and remorse. So that kind of oh yes feeling, you know, it's like that the mind is just really happy to be here, you know. It's like it's not going to go anywhere. It's not going to go chasing off of anything. It's like, no, this is good. I'll stay here. So that sukha really kind of keeps us here. And then the ekagata, one-pointedness of mind. I haven't been giving you the Pali for each of these, actually. I hadn't intended to give you the Pali for these. The last quality is a kind of a one-pointedness or a unifying of the mind with the experience, that the mind kind of stays or sticks with the experience, the object. And this is said to counter sense desire, that hindrance of wanting things, of wanting something. So as we cultivate concentration, We both actively let go of the hindrances by recognizing them as they arise, and as the concentration develops itself, it naturally begins to kind of set aside the hindrances. Now, these qualities, these beautiful qualities, are naturally countering those difficult hindering energies. And so we have two things that are helping us to let go of the hindrances. There's the active letting go, and then there's the kind of natural way that the concentration actually keeps those qualities at bay. It doesn't actually eliminate those energies, as anybody who, you know, finds themselves in a state of concentration, you know, can feel in a state of concentration, you can feel so clear and so pure and so, you know, clean in a way. And it's very blissful. The experience of being without the hindrances, it feels really good to not have the mind be pulled around in the direction of not liking and wanting things or being restless about things or confused and in doubt. It feels really good to have those things not happening. But the concentration is it's a constructed state. It's a state that is essentially temporarily allowing us or helping us to set aside the hindrances, but it's not eliminating them. And so when that state of concentration ends, we may find and often find sometimes it feels almost worse in a way afterwards, because we've had a taste of what it's like to not have those hindrances, and then those hindrances come back and it's like, oh, here they are again. I thought I was free of them. But no, here they are again. So the seclusion from the hindrances in concentration brings a lot of happiness and bliss to the mind. So the classical definition of concentration in what the Buddha taught in the suttas, in the texts that the discourses that the Buddha gave, has to do with refining this kind of one-pointed concentration, so that as the mind settles and collects on one object, what happens, and I'm not going to describe this in any detail at much at all, but what happens is the mind begins to absorb into that experience such that, you know, other things start to fall away. You know, most of the time or much of the time when we're practicing, we're experiencing the breath, and yet we are also experiencing many other things kind of in the background. It might feel like we're kind of in a broom closet. You know, there's the experience that's happening. It's like everything else is pretty muffled, but we're knowing there's still a kind of a recognition of other experiences. As the concentration deepens, we can actually absorb more and more fully into that experience, and other things start to fall away more, so that there's more of a collection, more of a unification on that experience of the breath. And that can get fairly deep, those states of concentration, and more still, in a way. Those states get more still. So that's the classic definition of concentration in the Pali Canon. And there are some places where concentration is also talked about as being concentration, kind of concentration that's helpful for the path is concentration that has mindfulness and energy and right view and right intention as supports for it. And this leads to a kind of a different perspective on concentration, which is highlighted in the Theravada tradition, which is called this moment-to-moment concentration, this other kind of concentration where the mind gets still, not the awareness is still, but it's not that the mind is absorbing into any one experience. It's much more of a stability of mind rather than stability of objects. So we stay present. We can stay present for the flow of changing experience, moment to moment, by what's happening, about what's happening. This kind of concentration, where the mind becomes stable, in my experience, needs a really clear understanding of what mindfulness is, what this state that Gil was talking about last night is. Because with so much happening, we need to have a sense of what it means for the mind to be stable in awareness. Because it's really easy, as things are happening, as many things are coming and going in experience, for the attention to kind of get caught by one of them and pulled out and start wandering around on that. So it's kind of, my image is kind of holding still and seeing a dynamic flow. It's like this changing flow of, it's like this ever-present still now with a dynamic change happening. So it's pretty easy to drift off into vagueness if there's not a clarity about what mindfulness is with this kind of momentary concentration. So the hindrances will also arise as we stabilize our attention in this way. And the practice of this kind of concentration is one of simply, can you meet whatever arises? And this is what we're guiding you in these days as we open up the field of attention, that we stabilize our attention on the breathing, but we also allow ourselves to take in other experience. You know, if body sensations become strong, we allow those to become what our mind attends to. If emotions become strong, that the mind can attend to that. Concentration can develop with this kind of practice. As hindrances arise, we simply see them as just the next thing that's arising in the moment. Oh, anger's arising. Can I be aware of that? Just as I can be aware of a sensation of the body. Happiness is arising. Can I be aware of that? Just as I'm aware of a sound. So we just watch the flow of changing experience. The five qualities or strengths of concentration also come up in this practice as well, as we stabilize our mindfulness on changing experience. We also have the factors of being able to connect and sustain the mindfulness. The mindfulness connects not just with one experience, but connects in every moment with changing experience. The sustaining is the sustaining of the mindfulness, not sustaining on an experience. The happiness, the bliss, the one-pointedness is more of a meeting of an object in a moment. Each object is just clearly met and known. So in this way, we cultivate a kind of a continuity of mindfulness, and this allows the concentration to develop. So the energy and the concentration, and the energy and the mindfulness together bring the concentration. So how does understanding come from concentration? How does this happen? What do we explore? So the absorption concentration, the first kind of concentration that I spoke about, does result in very pleasant experiences, but in that absorption into an experience becoming very still, that place, when the mind gets that still, it's not as conducive to insight. The mind is more absorbed into the experience and is kind of held in that space of the state of concentration. And so that state itself, in and of itself, is not so conducive to insight arising. But you can, I want to talk about a couple of different ways that understanding can come from this kind of practice. And one way that understanding comes as we develop this kind of one-pointed concentration is that insight is gained as we make the attempt to come back over and over again, as we try to cultivate the concentration. We learn a lot about what keeps our minds busy and occupied. So we get kind of a lesson in our minds as we try to do this exercise. So we learn a lot about what we cling to. We learn a lot about what we hold on to. It's like, what are our strategies for happiness? You know, it's like this practice of coming back to the breath over and over again is not initially something that we would think, well, that's a way to happiness, you know, so our mind is going to naturally kind of veer off in its usual habitual ways of trying to find happiness, of going off into fantasy or figuring out how to fix things or change things. So we'll get a good education in what our mind thinks happiness is, how we cling to states, how we cling to how our own minds construct our suffering. We also start to see how we cling to the pleasantness of concentration and how that tends to have the concentration fall apart. So we learn about that clinging itself not being skillful, even to beautiful states. Even to the beautiful state of concentration, we see that trying to hold on to it actually gets in the way. So again, we learn how clinging to things causes struggle, stress, suffering. We also start to learn about cause and effect. What is it that helps to put together this state of concentration? We get to see how a state of concentration is created. Does the mindfulness and the energy work to come back over and over again? The mind sees how the hindrances are abandoned, how these other factors come into play. We begin to see factors of enlightenment arising. We begin to see mindfulness and investigation and energy and rapture and concentration building, calm and equanimity building. And we see the benefit of those. And so again, we're getting an education in what's wholesome, what's helpful, what's unwholesome, what's unhelpful, as we make this practice, as we do this practice. The deeper insights that come with mindfulness practice generally come as we allow our attention, our stable, concentrated mind, to open to change. This can be a doorway. This is one of the key insights that the Buddha pointed to. You know, that everything is changing. Everything is impermanent. Because of that, nothing is particularly reliable as a place where we could be happy. Nothing is particularly, you know, if we try to pick something out of the stream of our experience and say, that's it, that's what's going to do it for me, the law of impermanence will take effect and it's going to end. And so that kind of pinning our hopes on happiness on that thing is going to lead to disappointment. So unreliability. The experience is impermanent. Because it's impermanent, it's unreliable. And there's nothing in our experience that can be considered I or me or mine. Essentially, everything is just a flow. Nothing to call me, nothing that I can really say is mine. So the transformative insight, that the reason why the recognition into these transforms us, is because our whole strategy for happiness is usually founded on a complete misunderstanding of the way the world works. You know, it's founded on a belief that somehow I can find some experience or something that will do it for me. If I get that thing, if I get that experience, if people have this view of me, that will be what makes me happy. So we fundamentally misunderstand, we misinterpret. And we think when we fail at that, that we've done something wrong. You know, we think when we fail at finding happiness in this way, we've done something wrong. But it's not that we've done anything wrong, it's the law of nature. Things are impermanent. They're not reliable. Of course we can't find happiness that way. So the exploration of understanding is to turn our attention to change. So the moment-to-moment concentration is very naturally already attuning to change. As we if we're cultivating that kind of mindfulness, that kind of concentration, the moment-to-moment stability of awareness with changing experience, we're naturally already attuned to change. And this is a very powerful practice, this kind of concentration. And in my own experience, I have found before I had ever had any practice of jhana, very, very deep insight through this kind of concentration. Very profound and liberating insight through this kind of moment-to-moment concentration. So that kind of, and there sometimes is a question of, you know, so the Buddha defined concentration as being this absorbed concentration, so it must be necessary. And I think it is necessary in the overall path of practice. But some minds may have a more of a facility for this open moment-to-moment concentration and have that be their doorway into the Dharma. A lot of insight can come through that doorway. Other minds may have more of a facility for the stability of mind, the one-pointed concentration. A lot of learning and understanding can come from that, as I just described, in the construction of the state itself. And then with that kind of concentration, the exploration is, once the mind has kind of honed itself to that degree, one of the instructions is turn that concentrated mind then to changing experience. Once you have settled the mind, gotten it very still, at some point you need to turn to changing experience in order to begin to understand, open to the insight. But these are two different doorways. They can be two different doorways into practice. Both are valid. And I think ultimately we need to cultivate both sides in our practice to have a well-rounded practice, that those of us who come through the doorway of moment-to-moment concentration and gain insight in that way, at some point may need to really settle and stabilize the mind so that the insight can really deepen more and more. Those of us who come through the doorway of the concentration may also need to learn, the hard part for them may be learning, how do they let go of that blissful state to open to the chaotic feeling? It can feel kind of chaotic if you've come from that place of stillness to open to all experience. How do you move to that? How do you stay balanced in that? So both sides are supportive. Both sides are helpful in our practice. And at different points in practice, you may find yourself naturally drawn to cultivate either the moment-to-moment concentration or the one-pointed concentration. You may find a kind of blend between the two, a way that they can support each other, which has been a lot of my practice. Seeing how I can go back and forth between them. So the point of cultivating concentration isn't so much the pleasantness that arises, but it is the possibility of clear seeing, the joining of that clarity, or that, it's like that sharpening, joining of that sharpening of the knife with the mindfulness, those two together. It's not just the concentration, and it's not just the mindfulness. Mindfulness and concentration work together to open us into insight. And that will be more the subject of what Gail talks about tomorrow. What insight is. So why don't we just sit in silence for a few moments.